This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Cheryl Glickman is a single 40-something-year-old woman living in L.A. She works for a company that makes self-defense exercise videos. She's got a psychosomatic lump in her throat that sometimes prevents her from swallowing and has a nearly obsessive crush on a 60-year-old man who's lusting after a teenaged girl. Cheryl, or more accurately, Cheryl's ever-chattering brain narrates The First Bad Man, the debut novel of the artist and writer and filmmaker Miranda July. Maybe you first heard that name when her quirky and charming 2005 film Me and You and Everyone We Know won the special jury prize at Sundance. Since then, she's made a second film, she's written a book of short stories and created a messaging app and has performed all over the world. The First Bad Man continues July's skill at revealing uncomfortable moments and unexpected truths. And Miranda July, it's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So this character, Cheryl Glickman, she is archly funny, I thought anyway. Maybe not on purpose, we imagine, because she's rigidly controlled. Can you tell us about her carefully constructed system, as she calls it, for living alone?
Right. Her system is like the way that she keeps house. And yeah, she lives alone. And I think we all kind of do this, especially when we live alone. Like, you just come up with the most efficient way to do things. So, for example, she doesn't use a bowl or a plate. She just eats right out of the pan. And she only has one set of dishes, so they can't accumulate. And there's this thing called carpooling, which is if you're going to move an object to put it, you know, back where it goes in the house, you wait until there's a number of objects that need to go in the same direction, and then you carry them all together. Things like that, which I should say, like, which sounds so crazy when you isolate them and write them down. But I think people do this kind of thing without thinking.
And it is constantly going on inside of her head. So we know what it is. She's got this inner dialogue that sometimes borders on the delusional, I think. Was indulging in that a fun exercise for you? What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was a joy to write Cheryl. She's sort of like my shadow self that I furiously work to, like, outrun, you know? Like, I have to work very hard all the time every day not to be her.
So she's unfiltered you?
Well, no, she's me if I didn't, like, make things all the time. Hmm. I mean, I'm making things all the time so that I won't end up being completely inert and alone like her.
Well, you do. You've manifested so much in your life. You know, I'm thinking of this quote from True Detective. I mean, you know, did you watch it, by the way?
I've watched one.
Okay, so the Matthew McConaughey character, he says, life's barely long enough to get good at one thing. And here you are, you write, you've made films, you do performance art, and you make it look kind of easy. Does it just look that way?
Yeah, no, it's as hard as doing just one of those things, which is plenty hard. I mean, I think I myself, if I was listening to the radio and I heard that description, I'd be like, oh, that person isn't taking any of those things seriously. But all I can say is I just started out that way. Like, I've never not done this. When my first movie was kind of a bit of a hit, I was encouraged, like, okay, now just do movies. And it was like, well, but what about all these other things that have been sustaining me, you know, and on all these different levels? Like, I really should just drop all of them because this is the thing that other people care about or that I could make money on. So it's something I do for myself first and foremost.
I think it's inspired a lot of jealousy, a lot of venom from people. I was reading on the back of your book, there's a blurb by Lena Dunham. And when I was doing research for this interview, I was actually shocked to learn how much you have in common with her in terms of haters. You know, you've inspired a lot of anti-fans. Do you think they have a problem with your work, or is it your ability to just do it all and succeed?
Yeah, at this point, I feel like I don't like that story, the story of haters is almost, it's not that it's not true, but it's almost like media generated. Hmm. Like, I think what Lena and I both experience is our extreme luck to be doing exactly what we want to do with a massive amount of supporters. And yeah, I'd say that neither of us is fitting into the exact way a woman is supposed to be. Like, if you're not perfect, and neither she nor I are perfect or perfectly sexy, then you're supposed to be a little bit apologetic about yourself. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're annoying.
I was actually wondering if it was female focused.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to Cheryl, because she's the female who is the focus of your book. In this novel, there's a lot of fetishism. There's this blurred lines between sex and violence, but in a very literary novel kind of way, very different from, let's say, 50 Shades of Grey. Okay.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about the role that sexuality plays in this book and what you were exploring?
Yeah, well, it's so interesting because this character is actually almost asexual. I mean, she's in her 40s. She's pear-shaped. She's not beautiful. And I guess my way into her was into her sexual fantasies, which I got kind of fascinated by the fact that we do all these things in our sexual fantasies that don't reflect who we are on the outside. I mean, I think that straight people have gay fantasies. I think that women, without even being aware of it, are often the man in a sexual fantasy, simply because you're thinking about the object of desire, which, whether it's you, you know, or another woman, you're thinking about how nice it feels for the man, you know, which is kind of the way that sex is sold to us. Like, the man is the one kind of having the most fun. And so in talking to friends very carefully and respectfully about this, and thinking about my own inner world, I realized, like, oh, I can have a character completely go off the hook without she herself needing to be freaky or radical in any way. I mean, she's quite a conservative woman, because that is actually how we are.
I'm speaking with the artist and filmmaker and author Miranda July. Her debut novel, The First Bad Man, is now out. It is a wickedly funny book that takes on fetishism, neuroses, motherhood, to the kind of inner dialogue that is running frequently inside of our heads. Well, there is a bit of a spoiler here, but through a weird chain of circumstances, Cheryl actually plays mother to a newborn in a certain point in this book. And there's this passage on page 220 that really struck me, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to read it for us.
Right, sure. But as the sun rose, I crested the mountain of my self-pity and remembered I was always going to die at the end of this life anyway. What did it really matter if I spent it like this, caring for this boy, as opposed to some other way? I would always be earthbound. He hadn't robbed me of my ability to fly or live forever. I appreciated nuns now, not the conscripted kind, but modern women who chose it. If you were wise enough to know that this life would consist mostly of letting go of things you wanted, then why not get good at the letting go rather than the trying to have? These exotic revelations bubbled up involuntarily, and I began to understand that the sleeplessness and vigilance and constant feedings were a form of brainwashing, a process by which my old self was being molded, slowly but with a steady force, into a new shape, a mother. It hurt. I tried to be conscious while it happened, like watching my own surgery. I hoped to retain a tiny corner of the old me, just enough to warn other women with. But I knew this was unlikely. When the process was complete, I wouldn't have anything left to complain with. It wouldn't hurt anymore. I wouldn't remember.
Miranda July there, reading from her novel, The First Bad Man. I loved that passage because it seemed so authentic to the experience of a recent mother, you know, this sleep-deprived, all-consuming state of early parenting. And I read that you actually handed this book into the publisher just before giving birth yourself. Is that true?
Oh, well, better than that. I handed in the first draft, so I had just gotten started. So I did, in fact, write, you know, did all my rewriting and most of the writing of the book in the first 2 years of my son's life.
Okay, so, well, that makes more sense to me, because I wondered how you came up with the words that rang so true.
No, I waited. In fact, I wrote a little note to my editor in that first draft. I was like, I'm not even going to bother filling out the baby sections because next week I'll be a mom and I'll know, you know. And it's true that, I mean, that section is one of the few sections in the book that's pretty much taken straight from myself. Mm. It's funny. There was a lot more of myself that I thought was going to end up in the book in terms of being a mother. And it was a process of crossing things out because it's like you come out of this fever dream and you realize, oh, wait, I'm telling a fiction here. Mm. And there are other stories besides my baby story.
Well, I know that in the book, Cheryl works at the pseudo-spiritual martial arts studio turned exercise video outfit. It is very new agey. And meanwhile, I read that you grew up in Vermont where your parents had a publishing company that focused on spirituality and alternative health and martial arts. In the book, the parent characters are very full of psychobabble. I'm wondering if there are autobiographical connections there in The First Bad Man.
Well, yes, for sure. And I think the thing is, if you grow up in that, that's what you have to work with. And you have a pretty deep, complex relationship to it. So, you know, one person might read it as just straight satire. Whereas for me, it's like, well, I know that these are real people, you know, and like, yeah, I can see the humor in it, but I also wouldn't just make fun of it. And I think there is that it kind of the book walks that line. Like you're never sure. Like, am I supposed to be believing in this? Mm. And that's kind of how I felt growing up. Like, I'm not ruling out anything. Like, color therapy might be real. I'm very open, but I'm also not going to be completely sold on anything because, you know, I've met so many people who are like, you know, color therapy is their life. And you know, I don't want to be that person either because there's a sort of blindness there. So I'm never quite sure exactly how it reads to the wider world, but it's what I have to work with. And each time I try and move very far away from it, you know, I find my way back.
Well, for this reader, reading about Cheryl taking the essence of red was pretty funny, I have to say. And Miranda, yeah. You starred in both of the feature films that you've made so far. I'm wondering if this book were turned into a movie, would you play Cheryl?
Oh, well, I'm not yet pear-shaped. I don't know if you were saying I was.
No, not at all.
I mean, I think
you could wear prosthetics. That's always good for, you know, getting a lot of good accolades.
Yeah, I don't know if you get an Oscar just for like a big butt. I think if they like age you,
it's got to be a nose or
something. Yeah. Well, you know, I actually very consciously tried to make a story that didn't have a character that I could play because I feel like that's something I get to do in fiction. And when I'm making a movie thus far, I've always felt like I need to be in it. And therefore, I have to have a character that's pretty much like me because I'm not like a fantastically talented actress. I mean, I can do it, but I don't want to try out being like a working class British woman. Like, I think I'll, you know, stay close to home. So I thought of these characters as looking unlike me. But yes, you're right. I would play Cheryl sooner than I'd play Klee.
I think there are so many good options for Klee.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
But so you have written this novel, a book of short stories. You've made two films. You've created this app. What's next for you?
Oh, I need to buckle down and start writing my next script. Hmm. Filmmaking is one of those things like I don't want to lose it. Like it's such a lucky thing to be able to do. It's so hard, but so worth it. So in between all these interviews and stuff, I write down little ideas. And I know that when I have some quiet time again, that I will just be writing this script.
Oh, I guess we won't be expecting the working class British woman in that script. But I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Miranda July, she's an artist, she's a writer, a filmmaker, and I think pretty much whatever else she decides she wants to be. And you can find out more about her new novel, which is called The First Bad Man, and read some of the terrific reviews. There are links at wordofmouthradio.org. Thanks so much for your listening time today. There is much more to hear and to explore at wordofmouthradio.org. And if you missed any of today's show, you can catch it in its entirety when you subscribe to the Word of Mouth podcast. There's a link to subscribe at wordofmouthradio.org or by searching Word of Mouth NHPR on iTunes. And if you like the podcast, please tell a friend. After all, the best suggestions travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please join us for more Word of Mouth tomorrow, too, right here on New Hampshire Public Radio.